The Daily Racing Podcast from William Hill.
And they're off.
Listen to the podcast at williamhill.com/podcast.
Third festival win and the biggest one today.
Or subscribe via iTunes by searching William Hill Podcasts in the music store.
Yes, hello, welcome along to the William Hill Racing Podcast. We're looking ahead to Friday's action on this edition. You'll hear it all live on William Hill Racing Radio from 1pm with Sam Norris, Chris Pimlott and Andy Holding in the studio. Real good day of racing to look forward to as well. We've got top class stuff on the flat at Newbury and Doncaster alongside the first meeting of the year at Cheltenham. We've also got Kempton and Dundalk throughout the evening. So, as we say, something for everybody to get stuck into on Friday. My name is Mark Walton and it's a very warm welcome to the podcast for the first time to Tanya Stevenson. How are you, Tanya?
Fine. Looking really forward to the National Hunt action starting in earnest with Cheltenham and then, of course, Aintree on Sunday as well.
Yeah, this weekend is where it really kicks up a gear, isn't it?
It does. And you can see by the entries, the trainers, you've got Gordon Elliott coming, putting in a few raiders as well. But more so, you see some of the big names. And it's become more and more important what they now call the showcase meeting at Cheltenham. And there has been occasions where they have thrown up pointers to March. The horses have done the double, say, win at the October meeting and win at March. And also, we mustn't lose sight of the fact we're going to have the final Group 1 of this season at the weekend as well.
Yes.
As well, certainly in this country anyway.
Yeah, final Group 1 for the 2-year-olds.
But I'm more focused on the jumpers.
Yeah.
It's done. That's done. Move on now. That's done.
It's this time of year where you start to really change over, isn't it?
Oh, I changed over a while back.
Did you? Are you more of a jumps fan?
Oh, big time. Yeah. I say the flat's only excuse to... until the next jump season. It's just a little bit of interest, potted interest.
Time to bring back the proper racing.
That's what I call it. Yeah. Apologies, flat enthusiasts.
You've had months of it, flat people. Give us a chance now with the jumps. That's what I say. Obviously, first time on the podcast, so we'd like to know a little bit more about you as well. Obviously, a lot of people will have seen you on TV and such through the past, so they don't know who you are. But in terms of as a person and a sports enthusiast, it's not just about racing for you, is it?
No, racing is only minuscule. Racing is literally minuscule. Racing is my work.
Yes.
And greyhound racing is my work. Greyhound racing was the basis and the foundation of my work because myself and my father had pitches, and my childhood, my mother was a racing manager worked in the racing office at Southend Greyhound Stallion. She's a Prater. You know, that's how the greyhound racing started off. And also the history through bookmaking as well, as part of the family's bookmaking business. So work is horse racing and dogs. Bit of escapism out of that is the maths and the algorithms and the probability where it comes to sport. So you're brought up in a household that on the radio and on the TV had nothing but sports. And nearest to us was like Essex at the time for the cricket ground. So I love cricket, football, you name it. But NFL, my father had some education in America, shall we say. And so instead of so much really overwhelmed with football, it's NFL I've been overwhelmed with for many, many years. So I am a huge NFL fan and I have been at Wembley for 22 of the 23 games. I missed out last Sunday. Yeah, because I can't fly, so I have to wait for everything to come to me. Sadly, I didn't enjoy the Raiders getting slaughtered by Seattle, but no, I do appreciate good sport.
No, you say you're a long-suffering Raider.
Yeah, I haven't seen much success with the Raiders. Just the 81 Super Bowl really is the one that I did appreciate, but you don't really see success with the Raiders, and that really tests you as a NFL fan. Mm. But you appreciate good NFL play, and I was sceptical and has proved rightly when John Gruden came back. I thought Jack Del Rio, their original coach before the enigmatic and charismatic John Gruden came back, was doing a fine job, and for whatever reason they waited and paid the big bucks to get the current coach, and it's all gone wrong now. They've traded Amari Cooper, they've traded Khalil Mack, I don't know what on earth for, because they've got a poor team, so they'd need like 40 players, not just two replacements.
It is exciting times though, in terms of moving to Vegas and stuff for Raiders fans, I suppose.
Yes, definitely exciting times. I'd be a bit concerned because when you go to Vegas, you go to Vegas to work. You don't have many people, well, not huge amount of people, say, basing there to reside. So it would be more of a travelling fans. they'd come in for the novelty to watch the Las Vegas Raiders, as it were. But they had to leave their stadium. It was rack and ruin. And that's why we've been lucky enough to see the Californian side come over here twice in recent years. It's been a bit of a complaint about their stadium. So they finally, I think they're a bit disappointed because they were hoping to take the slot that the LA Chargers took. San Diego went to the LA Chargers and Oakland wanted to go back to LA, but that didn't happen, and so they've got Las Vegas. And I hear from Mac and everyone that the stadium is absolutely phenomenal, and I should go there and shout from the rooftops and whatever. Yeah.
In terms of football, this side of the pond as well,
you're a long-suffering gutter.
Yeah, I was going to say, long-suffering. you like to pick the ones that cause problems.
We'll see how they do this week. I mean, okay, they beat Leicester weekend just gone, didn't they?
For a 10th win in a row, so it's looking okay at the moment.
Steady shot. They haven't been the biggest of sides. I mean, I can speak, having been at the Emirates to see them play Man City at the start of the season, I was the one that...
That was the disappointing one, yeah.
The disappointing defeat. But fair play to Unai Emery. I'm not his fan yet. For me, I'm still sitting this one out with Unai Emery, but he has got them into a flow, which is the main thing, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they've still
momentum's
got
building.
A lot of things to do to even match the likes of City, Liverpool's sort of enthusiasm. They've got, but they're on their way.
Mm. Could be a lot worse.
I could be grumbling. I shouldn't be because they appreciate there's some really good sides in the championship. My favourite league, though, at the moment is the Championship. I really enjoy the Championship.
I hate the Championship.
You hate it?
I'm a long-suffering Leeds fan. It's impossible to get out of the Championship.
Is there about four or five teams now on 24 points or something? It's just fantastic.
Yeah, from first down to 13th, there's about 3 points, isn't it?
That's no wonder if you're Championship. Any of those sides, you'll be amazed about what's going on in that league. It's great.
Yeah, it's great from an outsider's point of view, I imagine. A lot about other sports there, then. Obviously, we're here to talk about racing.
Yes, definitely. So,
in terms of favourite memories of racing, favourite race, favourite horse, what would stand out to you?
Terramon would always be my favourite horse, being that I was lucky enough to be on him very, very tiny each way for the Derby. And then, obviously, you wouldn't know, but myself and my father had Pitchett's York, so when he won the International... I had to be extracted, say, from near the pitch, because otherwise it wouldn't have been ethical cheering home a 25-1 shot when you've got a really short price favourite in the race.
Yeah.
So Terramon for me would be one of my favourite horses, and the jumps would be something like Frenchman's Creek. But for the connoisseurs, obviously they'll be talking about the likes of See the Stars and Frankel. Well, that's not for me. That's for the real connoisseurs. I'm more minded to have personal favourites and enjoying sort of races and occasions, if anything, and things that have helped the wealth of my pocket. I'm more mercenary, but then that comes with the territory with me. So Sir OJ, that got up in what was, I think it was a December meeting at Cheltenham, right on the line. If you look back, that's an Noel Mead, Paul Carberry teamwork. Those sort of finishes, they do it for me. And on the flat, the likes of a Tillerman, as it were, that used to sit pretty, weave through the field and win on the line. Or indeed, Hughes's ride on Soul Power on the Nunthorpe.
Superb, yeah.
That was a sight to behold. I enjoy those sort of things, yeah.
Yeah, they're always great when they come off, but quite frustrating if they don't, I suppose. That's kind of thing. You're hostage to fortune.
Kaiser Soze is a case in point with Jamie Spencer. I thought that was a great ride, but he was unlucky. He had to hit the front so soon, and then he became the target.
Yeah, good stuff. In terms of this national hunt season coming up then, what are you looking forward to? Maybe two or three horses to follow?
Yeah, I was looking, and when I started putting a list together, it seemed as though I might as well have put Seven Barrows, really, and meaning that's Nicky Henderson's
stable. He's going to have a strong year, isn't he?
He's going to have a very strong year. And maybe when he puts out the sort of stable watch thing, I liked a horse called What's Wrong With You. He was flagged up, shall we say, or ran well in the Imperial Cup or not so. He carried a low weight there where Mr. Antonini won the race. And then somehow he came back into himself, the horse, and showed his worth when he came out and won at Newbury. And this year, I think, is his year. He was more... learning, he was so inexperienced. He showed his inexperience in the hustle and bustle, say, of those big handicaps. Travelled extremely well, and then when he was asked for a question, he didn't have the tactics or the versatility or agility to just weave through and nail it on the line. This year he will.
Yeah.
And then when I mentioned Santini, everyone will groan with Santini, because there was a race that got away. Definite race that got away. And thus, we all saw it, and we were all on at Aintree. And this horse will be something special. I don't know whether he'll keep it to the hurdle. I'm worried all the time when they got these good hurdlers and they rush them over jumps. Mm. there are horses that are definitive hurdlers. Say, in his time, Hartshipboard, you would never have dreamt of putting him over jumps because he just had the speed. And I would be more minded to keep hurdlers and be more patient and keep them over hurdles and try and rack up all these good wins. And Santini is... When he had to make up all that ground, that accentuated the fact of how much pace he had. Even though it's over a longer trip, he should be kept to the hurdles. But I'm guessing he won't be. Hmm. You know, he's one of them that won't be.
The temptation is always too great to go over the larger obstacles, isn't it, I feel?
It is, and it shouldn't be. The patience. And I know I can sympathise with the if-onlys. What happens, you know, if he's got a niggle and he's out for a season, something like that. And then also going with Santini in mind, with What's Wrong With You in mind, something like Kalashnikov. I think we all love Kalashnikov.
Yeah.
Considering his size, he did so well in the big hurdle race at Newbury. And then I think his best race, in fairness to him, was his defeat in the Supreme Novice at Cheltenham, his best race, because he'd come off of expending so much energy in that Newbury race.
Yeah.
He'd come off of that and yet showed that there was no ill effects in effect. And we'll see that, I think, Somerville Boy and those two. And as it's proved in previous Supreme Novices, if you get those races up and see where they are now and what they've done, the depth of the Supreme Novice and the speed it's run. And already there's really low quotes for Kalashnikov for the Arkle, isn't there? And his size is his scope, and he can. You expect him to take to a fence. If he can run with such vigour over hurdles with his size, goodness me, what's he going to do at speed over the bigger obstacles?
Yeah, when we watched that Supreme, I was in the studio that day as well. And we all said, Kalashnikov, how great will it to see him go over fences?
Yeah,
he looked the chaser in the lineup, didn't he?
He did, and yet he nearly won the race.
Yeah, exactly, which is something.
And as I said, I backed it up because of what he did beforehand. It's no easy task doing that at Newbury and then coming on and trying to win Supreme Novice, and they nearly pulled it off. So fair play. And Amy Murphy will be a trainer to follow. Because,
yeah, she made a great start.
Yeah. And with that in mind, there's a couple of little jockeys, I shouldn't be so patronising, a couple of jockeys to follow, like Harry Teal and Harry Stock.
Yeah.
They're worth following even and making the most of their claims at the moment. They won't sort of, I hope, fingers tightly crossed, that they ride stacks and stacks of winners. They're entitled to. They've done really well in their careers to date. And I noticed some, I think it's Harry Stock is getting big outside ride at the weekend at Cheltenham. So keep an eye out for him, and indeed Harry Teal as well. They are worth their weight in claim gold, shall we say.
Yes. Yes, he's on Lord Condy, isn't he?
That's what I spotted, because there was some form earlier this week which were interwoven for Lord Condy, and that's been working out. And Lord Condy's won something like two of its last three or four.
Yeah,
hasn't
won his
it?
Last two coming into the
yeah
season,
that's
yeah.
a good race though, isn't it? That Lord, that
yeah,
Lord
it is,
Condy.
Yeah.
That's a tasty race, that Lord Condy race.
It is, and you've picked it as one of your races to
yes,
preview.
I have.
So we'll move on to those. We'll get some selections for Friday. Before we get to that, we've got the 3:45 at Cheltenham to look at, which is a novice's chase of 3.5 miles a furlong, a small but select field, I suppose you could say here, and a lot of eyes will be on little Rockefeller, who goes over the larger obstacles. Obviously a very useful staying hurdler.
Yeah, we're against Pick a Mix in this race, and I think the problem, the test for little Rockefeller is, well, we know he acts around Cheltenham, but his chasing debut was at Uttoxeter, which is more flat.
Yeah,
he was portly and fat. I will say that, and not meaning to insult the trainer, because he's just come off a summer break, and they would have been over the moon because it was over 2.5 miles. He's a horse that wants further than 2.5 miles. And some people were initially pouncing him and said he looked workmanlike. Well, one, he was portly. One, it was 2.5 miles. Two things to count against him.
And
yet,
he still won.
The thing that people didn't look out was his economical jumping. He never really made an error. Mm. It was job done. He still won. Now he comes to Cheltenham, which we know he runs supremely well over hurdles. There's no problem there. Different proposition over fences. I sense they'll try and do the same thing and make the run in with him. So then there'll be no mistakes. And if there's any comebacks, it won't be for the want of trying. He's over 3 miles this time. Brilliant. It's a small field. He'll be better because he's not so portly, I would have thought. And the ground won't be against him. He's very athletic, and the horse is very sensible. He's not someone, a horse you say, oh, we made the odd mistake of a hurdle. You know that he's going to be sensible. I think this is more of a case, if you like little Rockefeller, mixing him up, say, in a forecast, or looking ahead and sort of thinking where he's going to go next, or putting him in a multiple if you see something else running on the day that's quite short. I mean, I know I'm going to double him up with something later in the day, but I sense that because of who who he is going to be very short, and quite rightly so.
Yeah.
Quite rightly so.
It'll be odds
but on something, on, something on the distance.
Yeah.
There might be something on the distance that's
Fair enough.
Attractive.
So you're looking for an impressive victory from
I'm
him?
I'm looking for an impressive victory, not just the 1.5 he did last time.
Yeah.
And I think the connections will want to look for an impressive victory, because they'll be attacking the fences. They won't be holding back and being ginger and hesitant on the fences. They'll let him flow, which is wonderful. It's what the public want to see.
Yeah, yeah. Do check out the William Hill website for the specials on the day as well. See if Little Rockefeller is in there to win by X number of lengths or whatever, because Tony's expecting him to win quite nicely. The 5.30 is the second race that we look at. A little bit more competitive, this one.
Yeah, it doesn't faze me at all. The trainer's is a good friend.
Okay.
She's the pair of us used to work together on Channel 4, Kerry Lee and I.
Yes.
And she's blossomed into a very good trainer, having taken the reins over from her father. And I picked on Magic Dancer because of his liking for the course.
Mm.
He won at the November meeting, won very nicely. I remember him swinging through on the bridle, scything past Oxwich Bay, happy for all the people that were on him. It was a good performance. And then perhaps they got overconfident and said, hold him up at Ascot. And it was exaggerating holding up tactics, mixed up with the fact it was a much more competitive and classier rivals.
Yeah.
Still didn't perform too bad. Then they left him off the course and he ran in one of those really handy bumper for jumper races at Kempton, mm-hmm. because we had the bad weather. No ill effects, because back at April, Kerry's brought him back to Cheltenham. And this is the key part. He's hacked up by 6 lengths from Fourth Bridge, who's, if anything, you might say, oh, the Fourth Bridge does lots of seconds and thirds. But he's a great yardstick horse for handicapping. And he's raced away from Fourth Bridge. Sorry, Your Majesty. He's raced away from Fourth Bridge quite comfortably in the end by 6 lengths. So you're leaving you wondering, this is the end of the season, how much more there's at the tank for this Magic Dancer. I sense there is a lot more. She's kept it over hurdles. She's carried a trainer that, you know, probably eventually will have Magic Dancer over a fence,
mm-hmm.
but she's used this opportunity. It's a conditional rider's handicap hurdle as well. And Richard Patrick is the conditional rider aboard. She's a retained jockey for Kerry Lee. He was the man on board when Magic Dancer won in April. So all things working out. It's not someone that, oh, we'll pick that conditional because he's riding really well. He or she is riding really well at the moment, and it's take a handy. Richard Patrick knows the horse well. Scott, and no doubt will be riding it out every day, but if not, won on it last time. And we don't know how good this horse is going to be. You expected it to be good when they all shoveling the money on in November and they all went with their wheelbarrows back to collect it. And then we don't know what happened in between, but obviously no ill effects because it's 2 from 2 at Cheltenham, which is the main thing.
Yeah.
It'd be very, very dangerous. And what is, and I don't deny, a very competitive race, but Magic Dancer is there. And the beauty, he'll be held up. And Richard Patrick has got that kind of timing in his head to scythe it through and say, here we go. And if it's not good enough, it's not good enough. But when they all congest, we're in between the second last and the last, he's going to be in the melee about 5th or 6th, and then hopefully the last he'll burst through, in theory.
In theory.
trying to read the race already.
Good, good. And the great thing about that, if I ever have a bet in a conditional jockey's race, I look for one that knows the horse, because a lot of these will be first time they've ever sat on the horse, and he's won twice on this horse. So.
He has, Richard Patrick, and he's only a £3 claimer now, conditional jockey, which shows you his experience in the amount of winners he's ridden and he's used quite often outside. He's very good indeed, isn't he? And look forward to Kerry, because she's a slowly like, where she'll bring them through gradually, all her horses. She hasn't had too many runners in the summer season. We sort of align Kerry with the fact that, a bit like Venetia Williams, her runners need a little bit softer surface, but Magic Dancer isn't that. He's not case in point. He does need a little bit quicker ground, and I don't think there's any rainfall, because it's just going to be beautiful, crisp, clear days.
Good stuff. So Magic Dancer, the selection in the 5.30 at Cheltenham to go along with Lil Rockefeller in the 3.45. Those are Tanya's picks for Friday. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you, Tanya. Thank you very much for joining us on the podcast. Best of luck and enjoy at Cheltenham this weekend.
I can't wait to get down there. I'll be there on Friday.
Good stuff. Enjoy that. You'll be able to hear the action on that Friday, and of course for the rest of the weekend as well, on William Hill Racing Radio, 1 p.m. start time on the Friday, with Sam Norris, Chris Pimlott and Andy Holding in the studio. Newbury, Doncaster and Cheltenham in the afternoon, so good flat and good jumps racing, and an evening of all weather action, the usual Friday evening fair at Dundalk and Kempton. So do join the team for that. Thank you very much for listening to this William Hill Racing podcast, and enjoy Friday's action.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.